Have you ever been part of a team that just, I don't know, things where everyone instinctively knows their part, challenges feel more like opportunities, and results just seem to flow?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a great feeling.
Or, let's be honest, have you experienced the other end? You know, the dreaded meeting that could have been an email,
Happens all the time.
or that endless back and forth, or just feeling like you're pulling a reluctant wagon train uphill all by yourself.
Yeah.
We all know teamwork is critical, but making it truly effective, that's the real puzzle, isn't it?
Absolutely is. It takes work.
So today, we're taking a deep dive right into the core of what makes teams tick: communication and collaboration. We've pulled together, well, a really rich stack of insights, practical guides, and some real-world scenarios. The idea is to help you transform any team dynamic, even the really challenging ones, into, a powerhouse of productivity and genuine connection.
Yeah, and our mission for this deep dive really is to sort of demystify how you actually cultivate genuine trust, how you navigate those often tricky developmental stages teams go through, how to run meetings that people actually want to attend, maybe,
Huh? Wouldn't that be nice?
and how to leverage collaborative tools so effectively that group projects might just become, dare I say it, enjoyable.
Wow, okay. That's a high bar.
Well, consider this your tactical guide, your shortcut maybe to mastering team communication.
It's fascinating, how some teams just seem to effortlessly launch things or tackle really complex challenges.
While others just stumble over basic stuff.
Exactly. Basic miscommunication. And our sources really underscore that this isn't accidental. It's not luck.
None at all.
In fact, teams aren't static things. They evolve through these predictable phases, and
Yeah.
understanding these phases seems crucial for tailoring your communication and your leadership.
It's like knowing the terrain before you set off on a journey.
Yeah, good analogy.
And that's precisely why understanding this is so powerful. We're talking about what's often called Tuckman stages of group development.
Right, I've heard of those.
Yeah, and each stage presents these unique challenges and critically unique communication needs. So recognizing where your team is, well, that lets you proactively provide the right support, maybe mediate conflicts before they blow up.
Instead of just reacting to fires.
Exactly. You accelerate their journey to high performance. It's about being prescriptive with your approach rather than just reactive all the time.
Okay, so let's unpack these stages then, because like you said, it's not just theory. These are things we've all lived through on teams. What's that very first hurdle a brand new team faces?
Well, the initial hurdle is what we call forming.
Forming, okay.
Think of it like that first awkward cocktail party. You
Yeah.
know, everyone's new, polite, maybe a little bit guarded.
Yeah, feeling things out.
Right? The air is often thick with unspoken questions. What's my role? Who are these people? What are we actually doing here? So communication here needs to be really clear, direct, and supportive. You're basically defining roles, setting clear goals, and just encouraging those first kind of tentative friendly interactions to build that initial bit of trust.
Got an example.
Sure. Like when I first joined a product launch team, let's call them the Synergy Squad, our leader, day one, set up this short, informal virtual coffee. We just shared our backgrounds, what we hoped to achieve. Sounds simple, right?
Yeah.
But it instantly broke the ice. It set a foundation. We understood who was who.
Okay, so forming the polite phase, what comes next? Because I've definitely seen teams hit a wall right after that initial honeymoon period.
That wall. That's often storming.
Storming, sounds about right.
Yeah, this is where differences, inevitably surface. People start to voice stronger opinions. Maybe conflicts over responsibilities pop up. Priorities can clash.
Okay, yeah, less polite now.
Definitely less polite. It can feel uncomfortable, even a bit chaotic. But here's the thing. It's absolutely necessary. It's how a team establishes its true working relationships.
So you have to go through it.
Pretty much. The key here is open, transparent communication. Leaders really need to step up, mediate, encourage respectful debate, and importantly, model how to constructively express and resolve conflict.
How did that look with the Synergy Squad?
Well, there was this really passionate debate over which feature to prioritize first. Big disagreement.
That.
Instead of shutting it down, the team leader facilitated this structured discussion, made sure every viewpoint was heard, debated respectfully, and eventually they came to a stronger, more unified decision because of that storming.
That makes a lot of sense. Avoid simmering resentment later, too, a bit.
Totally. So once a team navigates those initial conflicts, what happens when they start to, find their footing.
Right. What's after the storm?
That's norming. Here, teams really begin to find their rhythm. They establish shared norms. They understand their roles better. Routines start to solidify.
Things calm down a bit.
Yeah. And that trust, which was definitely tested during storming, starts to deepen. Communication here shifts more towards reinforcing those clear expectations and norms. It's actually a great time to encourage feedback, not just on tasks, but on how the team is working together.
Like process feedback.
Exactly. For the Synergy Squad, this looked like defining their weekly check-in routine. Who imports what? How decisions get recorded? Everyone knew the rhythm, and that built confidence, allowed them to truly collaborate.
And once that rhythm is established.
Yeah.
That's when the magic happens, right?
That is exactly right. Then you hit performing.
The goal stage.
This is the stage everyone strives for. It's like a finely tuned machine, or that orchestra you mentioned earlier. Teams are efficient, productive, highly energized.
Yeah.
They collaborate almost intuitively, consistently produce exceptional results. Communication in this stage becomes more streamlined. You can trust team members with like high levels of autonomy because that foundation is so strong.
Less hand-holding needed.
Much less. Regular recognition and support are still vital, of course, but it's less about micromanaging and more about celebrating success and just clearing obstacles out of their way.
So the Synergy Squad got there.
Oh, yeah. Once they were performing, you could delegate huge chunks of the project with minimal oversight. You just knew the work would get done, and done well. Meetings became incredibly concise, purposeful, just focused.
Nice. Okay, but for many teams, especially project-based ones, there's an ending, isn't there? It's not always ongoing.
True. That's the final stage. Adjourning.
Saying goodbye.
Essentially, yeah. This stage is really about providing closure, reflecting on the journey together, and celebrating accomplishments. It's actually really important to acknowledge contributions, openly discuss lessons learned, both the wins and the stumbles.
Learn from mistakes.
Definitely. And give thoughtful recognition. With the Synergy Squad, they closed out their project with a virtual lessons learned session. Then they had a casual online celebration. It just allowed everyone to acknowledge their hard work and transition cleanly to whatever was next.
So the big takeaway here seems to be match your communication style to the stage the team is actually in.
Exactly. Forming needs clarity and introductions. Storming needs conflict mediation. Norming needs reinforcement of routines. Performing needs trust and delegation. And adjourning needs celebration and reflection. You adapt.
Adaptability. Okay, speaking of adaptation, let's pivot to something that seems critical at every single stage. Trust and psychological safety.
Foundational.
You've probably been on a team where people hesitate, right?
Yeah.
They don't share ideas. They don't ask questions because they're afraid of looking stupid or being judged.
Yeah, walking on eggshells.
Exactly. And that environment just stifles everything.
And the research here is incredibly clear. I mean, really clear. When team members feel safe enough to take risks, ask those dumb questions, admit mistakes, share half-baked ideas.
That's where the good stuff happens.
That's when innovation truly explodes. You know, Google's famous Project Aristotle, they looked at hundreds of their teams.
Yeah, I remember reading about that.
They found psychological safety was the single most important factor distinguishing their high-performing teams from all the others. It's not just about feeling comfortable. It directly impacts error rates, how quickly teams learn, and ultimately their capacity to solve complex problems and adapt.
Wow.
Yeah.
The number one factor. But doesn't just appear.
Right.
It's not automatic.
Definitely not.
So how do we deliberately, intentionally cultivate that kind of safe, open environment?
It really requires intention and consistent action. First, you absolutely must encourage open and honest communication.
Okay, how?
Well, it means actively inviting input from every single team member, especially the quieter ones, you know?
Make space for them.
Exactly. And you have to model vulnerability yourself. Admit when you don't know something. Admit when you've made a mistake. When the Synergy Squad started their brainstorming sessions, their leader would always kick it off by saying something like, look, no idea is too outlandish right now. Let's put everything on the table and just explore it together. Sets the tone.
Okay, so it's about making space. But what about really hearing what's being said in that space?
Great point. That leads right to the second step. Listen actively and empathetically.
More than just waiting for your turn to talk.
Way more. It means truly giving your full attention, asking follow-up questions to dig deeper, paraphrasing what you hear to confirm you've understood correctly.
Can you give an example of that paraphrasing?
Sure. If a team member expresses a concern, instead of jumping straight to a solution, you might try saying, okay, so it sounds like you're really worried about the timeline on this. Is that right? Can you tell us a bit more about what's driving that concern?
Ah, I see. Shows you're actually listening and trying to understand.
Exactly. That kind of act of listening builds profound trust over time.
And feedback. Oh boy, feedback can be so tricky. How do we make that a trust builder, not a trust breaker?
Yeah, feedback's a big one. That's our third step. Create a culture of constructive feedback, not criticism. Huge difference.
How do you define that difference?
Well, constructive feedback needs to be delivered respectfully, ideally, privately, if it's sensitive. And it always focuses on the behavior or the task, never the person.
Right. The report needed more data, not you're bad at reports.
Precisely. Ooh. And crucially, always pair it with encouragement and clear, actionable suggestions for improvement. So instead of just saying that presentation was messy, you try something like, hey, great effort pulling all that information together. To make it even clearer next time, maybe we could add a summary slide right at the beginning, just to orient the audience.
Much more helpful and less likely to make someone defensive.
Exactly.
I think normalizing mistakes is another huge one for safety. People often just try to hide them, right? Pretend they didn't happen.
Absolutely. And that's disastrous for learning and innovation. So, fourth, normalize mistakes and encourage learning from them. If mistakes feel shameful or punishable, people will never take risks.
So how do leaders do that?
Share your own past blunders openly. Frame mistakes, anyone's mistakes, as rich learning opportunities. Celebrate the process of experimentation, even if the outcome isn't what you expected.
Like that file deletion example you mentioned.
Yeah, with the Synergy Squad. When a team member accidentally deleted a crucial file, the leader's response wasn't, "How could you?" It was more like, "Okay, thanks for catching that and telling us immediately. This is actually a perfect chance for us to refine our backup protocol so this never happens again." See the difference?
Huge difference. Opportunity, not blame. What else builds this safety net?
Fifth, foster mutual respect and inclusion. This sounds obvious, but it needs constant attention. Every team member's input must be treated with equal consideration. Model respectful language yourself. Always. And this is critical. Address any disrespectful behavior immediately and politely.
Like interrupting.
Yeah. If someone constantly interrupts, a simple, calm, hang on, let's let Sarah finish her point first, can reinforce boundaries and show respect for everyone's voice.
Oh, man. One more.
One more key one. Sixth, consistently follow through on promises. Trust is built on reliability. It just is.
Do what you say you're going to do.
Basically, communicate timelines clearly. Consistently deliver on your commitments. And if there's a delay because things happen, acknowledge it promptly and explain why. Don't just let it slide. If you promise to circulate meeting notes by end of day, make sure they get sent. Or if you can't, send a quick note saying, hey, running a bit behind, notes will be out first thing tomorrow.
It seems like a lot of small things adding up.
They are small things, but they are the absolute bedrock of trust. Consistency is key.
It's those consistent actions that really stack up over time. Okay, now let's transition from these human dynamics, crucial as they are, to the practical mechanics. Let's talk meetings.
Ah, meetings, everyone's favorite topic.
Huh, exactly. We've all been trapped in those endless, soul-crushing, unproductive meetings that just drain your will to live.
We really have.
But they don't have to be dreadful, right?
No.
Our sources suggest that well-run meetings can actually be the engine of team progress.
They absolutely can. And think about the cost of bad ones. Poorly run meetings are often cited as like a leading cause of workplace frustration and just wasted resources.
Yeah, calculate the hourly rate times the number of people.
Exactly. Think about the cumulative cost of just 1 hour of unproductive time across, say, a 10-person team. It adds up fast. Conversely, efficient meetings don't just save time. They enhance clarity, they drive faster, better decisions, and they can significantly boost morale and engagement. They directly impact overall productivity. It's about optimizing a really critical touch point for the team.
Okay, so what's the blueprint then? How do we run a meeting that people actually value, maybe even look forward to?
Oh.
Okay, maybe that's too far.
Maybe, but we can definitely make them valuable. My first rule, always, start with crystal clear objectives and a detailed agenda.
Before you even schedule it.
Absolutely. Know why you're meeting. Is it just information sharing, problem solving, decision making? Outline the key discussion points. Maybe put estimated times next to them and state the desired outcomes. And critically, send this agenda out at least 24 hours beforehand.
Gives people time to prepare.
Right. For a recent Synergy Squad meeting, the agenda was super clear. Quick project updates, 10-minute, deep dive into Q3 marketing options, 20-minute decision required, action items and next steps, 10 minutes. Everyone knew the mission going in.
Okay, clear agenda. What else?
Once you're actually in the meeting, stick to your schedule. Time is gold.
Respect the clock.
Totally. Respect everyone's time by starting and ending precisely when you said you would. Use a timer if you have to, and don't be afraid to gently redirect conversations that stray off topic.
How do you do that without seeming rude?
Just a polite, hey, that's a great point, but let's circle back to our main objective for this segment. Maybe we can explore that further offline.
Hmm?
It usually works.
Good tip. What about getting everyone involved, not just the usual talkers?
Crucial. You need diverse perspectives. So facilitate participation from everyone. Don't just let the loudest voices dominate. Actively invite input from quieter members. Maybe try a quick round robin where everyone gets, say, 30 seconds to share their perspective.
Ooh, I like that. Quick and structured.
Or use anonymous polls for sensitive topics. With the Synergy Squad, after a major decision was presented, the leader would literally go around the virtual room asking each person, okay, what's your initial reaction to this? Any immediate concerns? It ensures broader buy-in, or at least surfaces concerns early.
In making the actual decisions. Sometimes that gets bogged down.
Yeah, analysis paralysis. To avoid that, you need to use structured decision-making methods, especially for complex choices.
Like what?
Things like dot voting, where everyone gets a few dots to put on their preferred options, is great for quickly identifying top choices. Or using a clear pros-cons list together. Or maybe a consensus method where everyone agrees to support a decision, even if it wasn't their absolute first choice.
So have a process.
Have a process. For the Synergy Squad's marketing options, they had dozens of ideas. A quick dot voting exercise helped them narrow it down to the top three in like 10 minutes. Saved hours of circular debate.
Nice. Okay, decisions made. What's next?
Yeah.
Often feels like things get dropped after the meeting.
That's where follow-through fails. So assign clear roles and responsibilities for meeting actions. Every meeting must conclude with clear, specific action items.
Who does what by when?
Exactly. Who is doing what and by when? Summarize the decisions made, confirm who owns each action item, and set firm deadlines. It sounds obvious, but this is often missed.
Yeah, the meeting ends and everyone just scatters.
Right. For the Synergy Squad, it was as simple as the leader saying at the end, okay, recap. Alex, you'll draft the proposal by Wednesday. Sarah, you'll circulate it for review by Friday morning. Is everyone clear on those actions and deadlines? Verbal confirmation.
Okay, clear actions. And the final piece, making sure it sticks.
Follow up quickly and clearly. Don't wait days. Send a brief summary immediately after the meeting, ideally within an hour or two.
Well, that fast.
Yeah, while it's fresh, restate the key decisions, the action items, who owns them, the deadlines. Keep it concise. Bullet points are your friend here. Quick readability.
Like that Synergy Squad example.
Yeah, just a quick email right after. Meeting recap. New marketing strategy approved. Actions. Alex, proposal draft by WED. Sarah, proposal review circulate by free. Simple, clear, done.
Okay, that makes meetings sound much less daunting. Now let's talk about the tools, the digital tools that are supposed to make our lives easier.
It sometimes just add to the chaos.
Exactly. You've probably experienced the final dot doc, final V2 dot doc, and my personal favorite, final dot doc nightmare.
Oh, the version control nightmare. I know it well.
Collaborative tools are supposed to save us from this, but often, if they're not used correctly, they just multiply the confusion.
That's spot on. And yet, when they are used properly, these tools are absolute game changers. They really can eliminate those version control headaches, enable seamless remote collaboration, centralize critical information.
Make things findable.
Right. And drastically improve communication clarity and efficiency. I saw a recent study suggesting teams using integrated collaboration platforms reported up to like a 25% increase in productivity.
Wow, 25%. That's huge.
It is. So the challenge isn't usually the tools themselves. It's how we integrate them into our actual workflow and our team culture.
Okay, so how do we prevent that tool chaos? How do we actually leverage these platforms effectively? What's the secret?
Well, first, choose the right tools. And importantly, keep it simple. Don't fall for every new shiny object out there.
Guilty as charged sometimes.
You all are. But really evaluate your team's specific needs. If document collaboration is the main thing, stick with something straightforward like Google Docs or Microsoft 365. For visual task management, Trello or Asana are fantastic.
Don't overcomplicate it.
Exactly. The Synergy Squad initially tried like a dozen different tools. It was chaos. They quickly scaled back to just three core platforms: Slack for quick comms, Trello for tasks, and a Google Drive for all the documents. Much better.
So less is often more.
Often, yes. Second, set clear usage guidelines. No tool chaos allowed. Tools are only as effective as the consistency with which they're used.
Everyone needs to be on the same page about how to use them.
Precisely. Define which tool is for which type of communication. For instance, make it explicit. Use Slack for daily check-ins and quick questions. Use Trello for assigning and tracking specific tasks. Use email for formal summaries and external communications.
And maybe naming conventions, too.
Absolutely. The Synergist Squad created simple naming conventions for files, like project name, task, your name date. Made everything so much easier to find and keep organized.
Good idea. And the beauty of these modern tools is that real-time collaboration, isn't it?
It really is. So, third, collaborate in real time. Leverage platforms like Google Docs for simultaneous editing. Encourage your team to use in-document commenting instead of firing off endless email chains for feedback.
Saves so much back and forth.
Totally. And maybe indicate document statuses directly within the file name or properties, like drafting, in review, final. The Synergy Squad would often just jump into a shared Google Doc to draft proposals together, making edits in real time, resolving ambiguities on the spot. It cut down their revision cycles dramatically.
That makes sense. It's also about centralizing everything, right? Not having info scattered everywhere.
Yes, that's critical. Fourth, centralize information and project updates. Scattered information is a massive productivity killer.
Where'd I see that link again?
Exactly. Use dedicated channels or threads in your communication platform, like Slack or Teams, specifically for project updates. Assign tasks and deadlines directly within your project management tool, like Trello or Asana, and make sure people regularly update those shared boards.
So one source of truth.
Ideally, yes. The Synergy Squad had a dedicated Slack channel just for their product launch. All updates, links to documents, key reminders, everything went there daily. Everyone knew where to look.
Okay, but what about team members who might not be as tech savvy or just resistant to new tools?
That's a really important point. Fifth, provide training and ongoing support. You can't just dump a new tool on the team and expect everyone to magically figure it out.
Right. That leads to frustration.
Definitely. Offer brief, targeted orientation sessions. Provide simple, quick start guides or cheat sheets. Maybe even record short, informal how-to videos for common tasks. The Synergy Squad's project manager held these optional 15-minute Trello Tuesdays just to answer questions and help anyone who felt stuck. It hugely increased adoption.
That's a great idea. Small, accessible support. Is there a final step for tools?
Yes, and it's about continuous improvement. Sixth, regularly review and improve your tool usage. No system is perfect forever, and team needs change.
So check in on it.
Periodically gather team feedback. Just ask, hey, are our collaboration tools truly helping us, or are they actually getting in the way sometimes? What's working well? What's frustrating? Be open to adjusting the guidelines, maybe even switching tools if something is genuinely no longer serving the team effectively.
Constant refinement. Makes sense. You know, all these strategies we've talked about, understanding team stages, building trust, better meetings, effective tools, they all seem to point toward the crucial need for just basic clarity.
Absolutely. Clarity is king.
Have you ever seen like a task just sit there untouched and everyone's kind of glancing around waiting for someone else to act?
Oh, the bystander effect in action. Yes, all the time.
That's the classic symptom of unclear roles, isn't it?
It really is. And the downstream effects are pretty significant. When roles aren't clearly defined, it doesn't just create confusion. It breeds frustration, it causes delays, and it can lead to a fundamental breakdown of accountability.
Because nobody knows who owns it.
Exactly. Conversely, when roles are transparent and understood, it dramatically improves team effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Tasks get done, communication flows smoothly, trust is built because everyone knows who is responsible for what. It's really the backbone of efficient collaboration.
Okay, so how do we achieve that clarity?
Yeah.
How do we make sure that everyone on a team, including, you know, yourself, really understands their specific role and their responsibilities?
Well, first, you have to clearly define individual roles and tasks and go beyond just job titles.
What do you mean?
Explicitly outline each person's specific responsibilities, maybe their decision-making authority on certain things, their key deliverables, and then document this somewhere shared and easily accessible, like in a team charter or just a simple shared doc.
Like the Synergy Squad example.
Yeah, they created a super simple document. Sarah, project manager, owns timeline, external updates. Juan, lead developer, owns code quality, technical architecture. Alex, UX designer, owns user research, UI mockups. Everyone knew their primary sandbox.
Okay, individual roles. What about communication itself? Who's responsible for talking to whom? About what? That can get messy too.
You really can. So that's second. Assign communication responsibilities explicitly. This prevents critical information from getting lost in the shuffle or having five people contact the same client.
Right.
Designate clearly who handles external communications, maybe client updates or stakeholder reports, and who is responsible for internal updates, like meeting summaries or status reports to leadership. For the Synergy Squad, it was crystal clear. Tom handles all client communications. Sarah is responsible for internal project status updates to leadership. No ambiguity.
Okay, and the channels. We talked about tools, but which channel for what message?
Also needs clarity. Third, establish clear communication channels. Specify which platform should be used for which type of information.
Be explicit.
Very explicit. The Synergy Squad mandated. Use Slack for urgent needs and quick operational questions. All formal documentation and major decisions will be communicated via email. And use Trello for tracking all development tasks and their status.
Got it. But things change.
Right.
Projects evolve. People shift roles sometimes. How do you keep this clarity alive?
Good question. It's not a one-and-done thing. Fourth, regularly reinforce and review roles. Teams are dynamic. Schedule brief, periodic check-ins, maybe monthly, maybe quarterly, just to confirm that roles still feel clear and that everyone's comfortable.
A quick tune-up.
Exactly. This is where you can proactively address any emerging overlaps or confusion and update the documentation promptly. Every month, the Synergy Squad had a quick 15-minute role check meeting. The leader would just ask, does anyone feel unclear about their responsibilities right now, or are there any gaps we need to address?
Simple but effective. How do you tie this back to accountability, making sure people actually do what their role entails?
Transparency is key here. Fifth, foster accountability through transparency. Make those documented roles and tasks visible to everyone.
Public, within the team.
Yeah, within the team. Tools like Trello or Asana, where tasks are assigned publicly on a board, can be incredibly powerful for this. Everyone can see who's doing what. Also, publicly acknowledge achievements tied to clear roles. And when deadlines are missed, address it respectfully, but directly and promptly, referencing the agreed-upon responsibility.
So visibility drives accountability naturally.
To a large extent, yes. And finally, one last point here. Sixth, encourage flexibility and cross-training. Having clear roles doesn't mean people should be trapped in rigid boxes forever.
Okay, how does that work with clarity?
Well, periodically, encourage two members to maybe handle a small task outside their primary role or shadow someone else. Provide cross-training opportunities where it makes sense. This builds resilience, what happens if someone's out sick, but it also fosters empathy. People understand other roles better.
Makes the team stronger overall.
Exactly. The Synergy Squad often rotated who took meeting notes or who ran a small internal presentation. The leader would explain, look, this makes us a stronger, more adaptable team overall, and it gives everyone a broader perspective on the whole project.
That's a great point. Flexibility within structure.
Yeah.
Wow, what a comprehensive journey we've taken here.
We covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, from really understanding how teams evolve dynamically, building that crucial bedrock of psychological safety.
Which underpins everything else.
Right, to running meetings that actually generate value, not just waste time. Leveraging those collaborative tools like a pro.
Taming the tool chaos.
And finally, clarifying roles so everyone knows exactly what's expected of them and who's doing what.
Mm-hmm. Bringing it all together.
And here's what feels like the powerful takeaway for me. Mastering these skills, it isn't just about, you know, ticking boxes on a performance review or making your boss happy.
No, it's much bigger than that.
It feels like it fundamentally transforms your experience of teamwork. It's about boosting productivity, sure, but also about increasing job satisfaction, reducing stress.
Making work more enjoyable.
Yeah. And consistently delivering those outstanding results that make everyone feel proud to be part of that team effort.
That's the goal, right? High performance and high satisfaction. They often go hand in hand when communication and trust are strong.
So as you, our listener, reflect on everything we've covered today, maybe consider this. If every single team interaction, every meeting, every email, every Slack message is viewed as a deliberate opportunity to reinforce trust and clarify communication.
A chance to practice.
Right. What unaddressed challenges in your current work environment, maybe those frustrating things you just accept, might suddenly become solvable? How could shifting that perspective, focusing on these fundamentals, fundamentally change the way you approach your very next group project or collaboration?